This week, the Down and Nerdy Podcast is brought to you by Claritin D. And shout out to the folks at Claritin who not just sponsored the show, but also provided some samples as well. Tis the season to breathe pollen. Yeah, I've been spending a lot more time outside. Yeah, I can tell those allergies are definitely acting up. I feel stuffy. I feel sluggish. The eyes are starting to water a little bit more. That's why I'm turning to Claritin D. Look, it's definitely helped me relieve my symptoms. It seems to work really, really fast for me as well. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongestion in your nose so you can breathe better. And hey, I'm noticing a lot of that right now. As a matter of fact, I'm looking forward to be able to enjoy much more outdoor time this spring and summer. A lot of that has to do with Claritin D. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed. Welcome to a special edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. It's comics, man. Yeah, I used to have a spinoff podcast called that. Haven't really done it in a while. The show's kind of gone by the wayside, but it's been a while since I put the spotlight just on comics. So I want to do that. I'm going to talk about a couple books. I'm also going to play you part of my interview with Amy Chu about her graphic novel Carmilla from Dark Horse Comics, which is perfect for Halloween, really cool vampire story. So I'll play part of my interview with her on this show. And then the entire interview is going to air on episode 492 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast this week. Because there's been some very interesting comics coming out. And there's been a lot of chatter about comics lately. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to kind of jump on and do this week. I'm actually going to jump right in here with Green Lantern, Alan Scott, number one from DC Comics, written by Tim Sheridan, art by I'm going to butcher some of these names and I apologize. Sion Tormey. We've also got colors by Matt Herms and letters by Lucas Gattoni. Now, here's the deal. There's been a lot of chatter about this book on social media, and mostly all for the wrong reasons, unfortunately. Like, there's been a lot of speculation on this book that's been kind of wildly ridiculous at times, I think is putting it mildly. And I just wish that more of the talk of this thing was about the actual book and not this potential controversy or whatever the hell you want to call it. It's kind of ridiculous. But I didn't read this book because of that. I was genuinely curious given, like, you know, the time period that this book was presented in. And, you know, we've got part of the 30s in this, and then we fast forward after that. So we've got a couple of different timelines here at play. But, you know, the J. Edgar Hoover is in this book. I'm going to try not to spoil really a lot of this because I'd rather you kind of experience it for yourself. But if I do call out any spoilers, I'll mention them right here. But, yes, J. Edgar Hoover is in this book. Yes, he deals with Alan Scott. Is it in the way that's been rumored? I can tell you that this is the first spoiler I'm going to give you. No, it's not. What you have heard speculation-wise about this book, it's just not true. And Tim Sheridan tried to tell people that. And it's ridiculous that it even got that far, but it's not true. Okay, and what you have is Alan Scott. We get to see Alan Scott before he's a Green Lantern in this thing as well. And we get to see him working in the military. We get to see some of his military life. And we get to see him working on something, or at least they're trying to find something that could be a game changer in the war. And yes, I'm talking about that war. It's late 1930s. Do the math. You know what war I'm talking about, okay? So the military is trying to get this weapon that would be a game changer. They think it's a weapon anyway. They can't be sure. Well, as luck would have it, there's way more to it than that. And you don't even really quite get an answer what this thing is that they encounter in this book. But that, again, you're not going to give everything away in the first issue. And that's the beauty part of this thing. So, yeah, you're gonna make sure that you set up a big mystery here. And they definitely do that. But again, this might be a minor spoiler. I think part of this is out already, but I want to make sure I talk about it. And that is that, you know, the JSA is a part of this book, and Alan Scott's relationship with the JSA is a part of this book. And something that happens in the 1930s is the reason he feels the way he does a couple of decades later. So keep that in mind as we're kind of working through this thing here. There's a reason he doesn't want to work with people. Let me just put it that way. Now, you know something about Alan Scott, and about his sexual preferences. You know that. That's been part of canon already recently, so that's not a secret. Is that a part of the story? Yes, it is. If that's a problem for you, hey, you know, not reading a book is an option. All I'm saying is there's a story at play here that you're going to miss out on if that's a deal breaker for you. But you have to know going in that, yes, that is a part of the story, because that is a part of the character. Like it or not, that is a part of the character. So, and there is more to it, and I'm trying to do this without spoiling it, obviously. There's more to it than just his sexual preference. His sexual preference is a part of this story in more ways than you think. And I will say that also to say that consider the time period that we're in here. let me just say that. Consider the time period that we're in and consider who Alan Scott is. And you can sort of understand maybe where I'm going with this. So there's a lot of intrigue at play here. There's a couple of dueling storylines that are going on as well. I will say that the art is fantastic. So the art team does such a phenomenal job with this book. I mean, this is good. This is good art by Cyan Tormey and Matt Herms. The colors in this book are phenomenal. Without a good colorist, you're not going to pull this book off at all. And hey, Tim Sheridan, that is no knock on you, buddy. You did a great job with the story as well. But without this art, this story just doesn't get off the ground, because you have to have, you absolutely 100% have to have what you have in this book, because given the thing that the military was looking for, because of that and how that's presented in this book, you have to have a good art and colorist. Otherwise, that's just not going to come off. The character designs are really good. It's pretty much what you'd expect from character design wise. So that was really good. But yeah, given this late 1930s and then post-World War II side of this thing, it's societally, I think it says a lot. It also says a lot about, you know, just a good superhero story. And, you know, then you've got the questions of, you know, hey, is Alan going to change his mind about the JSA? What's going to be going on with J. Edgar Hoover? Could we see the tables turned a little bit? Because, again, history tells us some things about J. Edgar Hoover as well. So it's just, there's a lot of interesting things at play here. And I don't want you to miss out on this book because of chatter that might be on social media or what you think might be happening. Although, again, I'm going to say this flat out. If this book's just not for you because of a certain reason, then you don't need to read it and you don't need to trash it, because there's no reason to do that at all. It's just silly to go ahead and hate on something that you don't really want to, you know, consume in the first place. So I think Green Lantern Alan Scott got off to a decent start. Is it perfect? No, but I think there's some intriguing things going on here, and I'm actually curious to see how this thing goes as well. So if you're an Alan Scott fan already, you're going to dig this. Go ahead and check it out. And it's available now, by the way. All the books I'm talking about are going to be available now, so you don't need to worry about that. You can run up to your local comic shop, or if digital is your thing, you could do that as well. I was also looking for a cool fantasy story to check out this week, so I decided to go with Edenwood number 1 from Image Comics. One of the reasons for that is because Tony S. Daniel was a part of this. He's writing and doing the art for this one, though, which I think is really cool. You got J. David Ramos on for the colors as well, and Nathan Kemp is going to be doing the letters for this thing. And let me tell you, this, as a fan of Tony S. Daniel and his art, I was blown away by this book. And you, the talk and the fantasy setting is incredible. Basically, you have a multiversal war that's going on between demons and witches. And you have demon killers and you have a witch army. Think about Motherland Fort Salem and how they presented the witches in the actual U.S. military, except this isn't the U.S. military, it's an actual military. So you have witches, but they are a part of the actual military that's going on, that is going after these demons. And the demons can take many forms. It's creepy stuff, let me just put it that way. And they're kind of battling in this area called the Necronema, I think is the name of it. And then there's the place, of course, called Edenwood. It's witch-controlled land. It's kind of a barrier between the war zone and the rest of the United States. So it is the United States. I didn't actually catch that, and I just saw that on the description. So yeah, that's cool. It is actually the United States. And I don't know if it's Ryan or Rion who is the main character And we sort of find out that, and again, I'm going to try not to spoil anything. He was just kind of, it's one of those things where you're just kind of out with your friends and, you know, something really terrible happens and then that changes your entire life. It's kind of the way it goes. And you're kind of, and he was kind of forced to make a choice. Do you go this route or you go that route? And he ends up going probably the smartest route that he could take. And he ends up kind of teaming up with somebody. And again, I'm trying really hard not to spoil this thing as I go here. But then you sort of find out that this book fast forwards a few years at one point once they kind of lay the groundwork for what's going on. So now what he has to do is find his way and kind of try and survive, but also find out what happened to one of his friends. That's the best way that I could possibly put it. And at first, this seems like when you get to the first few pages, you're like, oh, this is going to be kind of like a young adult thing. You know, it's going to be very similar to maybe Ruby, the anime. And then by Ruby, I mean RWBY, for anybody that doesn't know about that. That's the kind of vibe I was getting early on. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that either. But if that's not your jam, and then once you hit that pivotal breaking point in this book, the tone shifts, and there's also a shift in the mood of the tone of the mood completely shifts, and even the setting shifts a little bit too. Although so you start digging in more to the war, and everybody's a little bit older and everything, and then you find out that, you know, somebody that maybe you knew years ago, you might run into them again, sort of thing. So the friend group was very interesting. There's also a matter of, like, who survives this, because again, there's a pivotal part in this book, and almost like everybody knows it's coming, but nobody can do anything about it either. And just the thing that I really liked about this story-wise is that I was just intrigued, not just by the characters, but by the surroundings as well. You know, what is Edenwood? I wanted to learn more about it. I want to learn more about, you know, why this war is going on. And, you know, what are the stakes here? Obviously, the stakes are, you know, you want to be alive. That's one stake. But it seems like there's a lot more at play here. And we also don't really get a sense of what the witches can really do and what these demons and demon hunters can really do as well. You see a little bit of that, but not a ton. And you actually see the demons actually step up. There's a step up in these demons at one point too that I can tell you where it's like, okay, yeah, it seems simple enough, and then you sort of find out, oh, why, well, yeah, not so simple at all. So it's, again, a very intriguing, very interesting book, very interesting story. If you love the art of Tony S. Daniel, you are not going to be disappointed. I mean, you could almost get this book for the art alone, quite frankly. That's how freaking good that it really, really is. So yeah, go ahead and grab this one. Edenwood number one from Image Comics. Love it. I think you're really going to love it too, especially for the art. So go ahead and grab it if you haven't already. There's a couple of other books that I wanted to mention that I'm not going to give full reviews of, but I wanted to mention because there might be ones that you might be interested in as well. You've got Dark Spaces Dungeon number one. That is the Scott Snyder story. Yes, it is the same Dark Spaces, so you're going to get a little bit of a spin-off of that, which I think is really, really cool. One of my favorite writers, Ollie Masters, is back with a brand new book from Boom Studios called Slow Burn, and it's kind of like, they kind of describe it as like 100 Bullets and Criminal kind of mixed together, and it's a noir type feeling, and it's about a botched bank robbery in New York. It is really, really neat, so that's another one that I would put on your list as well. I mean, there's some other really good books too. If you're a Marvel fan, there's some really good Marvel books out this week as well. DC's got some other good stuff, but those are kind of the ones that were on my radar the most that I wanted you to go ahead and check out. So that's my comic book reviews for this week on the special edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. It's Comics, Man. Maybe I'll bring this back a little bit more often, but up next, I want to go ahead and share part of my interview with Amy Chu. Got to sit down with her at Comic-Con and talk about Carmilla, her graphic novel. Hey, vampires and Halloween, they go together. So we'll talk about it next. Part of that interview is next. I'm James Witham, and this is a special edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. It's Comics, Man.
Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This is comic writer Ollie Masters, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Comic-Con 2023, you know where I'm at right now? I'm at the cozy setting of the Dark Horse booth in the media room here, which is, I mean, it's a pretty sweet spread. Just going to tell you right then, right now, set the tone for you. But you know what I've got sitting in front of me? I've got Carmilla the First Vampire graphic novel. It started out at Comixology, now at Dark Horse and Burger Books. And let me tell you, the writer, a name you should recognize, Amy Chu. Amy, how you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing so well. And I re-familiarized myself with the story recently, Amy, because I read it, you know, back in 2022 when it first came out. And when I heard you were going to be here, I was like, I need to read that again and make sure. I'm so glad I did. So anybody that might not be familiar with it, though, tell them a little bit about Carmilla.
Oh, so Carmilla is a retelling of the original, I guess what we call public domain now, Carmilla, who preceded Dracula by 26 years. So this is a very old story of the female vampire, obviously, who, does the vampire thing with a, let's just say she's the first female vampire, but also very much a queer vampire.
Talk about setting this in New York a little bit. Part of me feels like this is like the perfect setting to like hide in plain sight sort of thing.
Thank
you. So
yes.
Did it feel like, was
yes.
that one of the reasons you chose
yes,
New York?
Yeah, so literally like I was thinking, first of all, I'm like, wow, this is such an interesting story. And if you read the original, which you should, because it's a good read, even though it's like what, like, you know, 19th century.
It's a lot,
It's a lot, but it's a good tell until the end where you're like, really? That's how you're gonna end it? So let's just say, as vampires do, if I were Carmilla, what would I be doing? I would not be hanging around Europe, who's basically hostile to my presence, right? Around, let's say, the turn of the 19th century, 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century. If I were Carmilla, I would go to, you know, the U.S., where things are happening, right? Industrial Revolution, everything. And where would I go? I would go to New York. So this is really a story of her basically uprooting, as one does, right? Especially if you have money. If you're old European money vampire, this is what I would do. Literally, I would go to New York. And so that's how the story sort of started taking on that of like, what would she do? And as one does, right, where would she feed and hunt, etc. So that's really the genesis of this story.
And I love that, you know, people hear, okay, Carmilla, vampire story, and you go in with a certain set of expectations, but I feel like it's not at all your typical vampire story. You know, you get the seduction vibes, you get corruption vibes. So were you kind of trying to go for the not quite traditional vampire story?
100%. I didn't really want it to be just all about vampires and like the very, it's really thematic. It's set in New York City in the 90s, mid-90s. So there's a lot of things I want to play with. The main protagonist is a social worker who understands figures out that there's a pattern of mysterious deaths going on. And that's really what I want, because that's really in real life. People forget that there are homeless teens out there, LGBTQ, basically, who disappear and nobody cares. And so I was taking something that was real world and trying to of course, there's a supernatural theme here, but that's really not necessarily the point of the story. So you're absolutely right. I wasn't trying to do, you know, here's a vampire world and here's the lore and here's the, right? There are plenty of other things you can read that will satiate that. This is really about hopefully a little bit of more psychological horror and And honestly, it's also set in a time of a grittier New York. Let's not forget this is the Berger Books imprint and Karen Berger, who founded Vertigo. Let's just say this is the most Vertigo thing I've ever written.
Yes, it is.
And I like to think that this is the most Vertigo thing that the Berger Books has put out so far.
No doubt about that. You also get to add some really cool cultural aspects into this as well. I think it's really neat because you said it during Lunar New Year. Your Athena is an Asian American woman. So talk about being able to mix in those cultural aspects as well.
Sure. Actually, that wasn't in the original pitch, but it was very much, again, New York City. And if some of you out there remember this, right? The mid-90s, things are a little definitely grittier. Not as bad as the 70s, right? But Chinatown was also a little bit different at that time, and it just seemed like a good place to sit. And then I am Chinese American myself, so some of that started coming out. I'm like, you know, let me start weaving in some of that lore as well. So there's a little bit of Chinese American history in there, but because also the pattern of death is around Chinatown. So there is a New York City Chinatown story in there. And there is also the story of gentrification, which happens in a lot of the neighborhoods, but particularly in Chinatown. So I wanted to get that, you know, the best stories I think have to have multiple layers, and that was very important for me to get it in there.
I love that you bring family into this too. This is obviously not the first story versus you brought the family aspect into. So talk about the relationship between Athena and her grandpa for a minute, because I just loved that dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah, you're right. I had to think about it. I was like, yeah, I guess I do that a lot. What I like, and I teach writing too at the Kubert School and SVA, and one of the things I like to try to get people to understand is a lot of the best stories is contrast between characters. And it's really kind of, not that you can't do it, but to have, let's say, a team book where everyone's kind of similar is not, you know, that's not the best way to tell a story. You want conflict, and I love to do intergenerational, and especially when you're talking about Chinese American or a lot of immigrant families in general, the intergenerational stories are important. And let's not forget, we're talking about a vampire lore. The other thing I want to talk about, which is why it's not traditional, because when we talk traditional, it's a little bit coded of, okay, Dracula, right?
Yeah, of course.
And Carmilla is European vampires. If you think about it worldwide, globally, there are many, many different kinds of vampires. Every culture has some form of vampire or demon. And so my point of talking about when we say American vampire is not just a bunch of European vampires coming over here. If we really talk about immigration, and this is Carmilla came over here, but you have to think that there are Asian American vampires, Haitian vampires, etc. So that was just the tip of the iceberg of what I was trying to explore with this.
And again, if you want to hear the full interview with Amy Chu talking about Carmilla and some other stuff as well, we really take a deep dive into not just this book, but comics in general and horror in general as well. It's really cool. That'll be on episode 492 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast, which will be coming out in about a day or so. So the regular episode will drop. Make sure you find out all the information though at downandnerdypodcast.com. Always going to be up there for you. And if you want more comics on the show, let me know at downandnerdy757. You can follow on the X or on Instagram there as well. You can also contact me at downandnerdypodcast.com, the contact us section. You can email me that way. It's just easier for me to get that way. And just say, hey, I want more comics back on the show again. Don't forget, episode 492 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast is going to be coming up here in a couple of days. So this was a special edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. It's comics, man, so make sure you support your local comic book shops.